Chapter 7. That night there was a bad storm. It hadn't let up when Dawn struggled to cross the world's palm with silver, and it continued on through the day's march. It is a very demoralizing thing to tramp along and be rained on, a cold rain at that. How I've always hated the mud, through which it seems I've spent centuries marching. We sought after a shadow way that was free of rain, but nothing we did seemed to matter. We could march to Amber, but we would do it with our clothing sticking to us, to the drumbeat of the thunder, with the flashing of the lightning at our backs. The next night the temperature plummeted, and in the morning I stared past the stiff flags and regarded a world gone white beneath a gray sky filled with flurries. My breath went back in plumes behind me. The troops were ill-equipped for this, save for the hairy ones, and we got them all moving quackily to prevent frostbite. The big red guy suffered. Theirs had been a very warm world. We were attacked by tiger, polar bear, and wolf that day. The tiger blaze killed measured ever 14 feet from tail tip to nose. We marched on well into the night, and the thaw began. Blaze pushed the troops to get them out of the cold shadows. The trump for Amber indicated that a warm, dry autumn prevailed there, and we were nearing the real Earth. By midnight on that second night, we'd marched through slush and sleet, cold rains, warm rains, and on into a dry world. The orders were given to make camp then with triple security cordons, considering the tired condition of the men, we were ripe for an attack. But the troops were staggering and couldn't be pushed much further. The attack came several hours later, and Julian led it. I learned later from the description given by survivors. He headed commando raids against our most vulnerable campsites on the periphery of the main body. Had I known it to be Julian, I would have used his trump to try to hold him, but I only knew it after the fact. We'd lost perhaps 2,000 men in the abrupt winter, and I didn't yet know how many Julian had accounted for. It seemed the troops were beginning to get demoralized, but they followed when we ordered them ahead. The next day was one continuous ambush. A body of men the size of ours could not be allowed to deviate sufficiently to try to deal with the harassing raids Julian led against our flanks. We got some of his men, but not enough. One for every 10 of ours, perhaps. By high noon, we were crossing the valley that paralleled the seacoast. The Forest of Arden was to the north and our left. Amber lay directly ahead. The breezes were cool and filled with the odors of earth and its sweet growing things. A few leaves fell. Amber lay 80 miles distant and was but a shimmer above the horizon. That afternoon, with a gathering of clouds and but the lightest of rains, the blots began to fall from the heavens. Then the storm ceased and the sun came forth to dry things off. After a time, we smelled the smoke. After another time, we saw it, flapping skyward all about us. Then the sheets of flame began to rise and fall. They moved toward us with their crunching, constant footsteps. And as they came nearer, we began to feel the heat, and somewhere, way back along the lines, a panic arose. There were cries, and the column swelled and welled forward. We began to run. Flakes of ash were falling about us now, and the smoke grew thicker. We sprinted ahead, and the flames rushed even closer. The sheets of light and heat flapped a steady, welling thunder as we ran, and the waves of warmth beat upon us, washed over us. Soon they were right there alongside us, and the trees blackened, and the leaves flaked down, and some of the smaller trees began to sway. For as far ahead as we could see, our way was an alley of fires. We ran faster, for soon things would be worse, and we were not mistaken. Big trees began to topple across our path. We leaped over them, we circled around them. At least, we were on a trail. The heat became stifling, and the breath came heavy in our lungs. Deer and wolves and foxes and rabbits darted past us, fleeing with us, ignoring our presence and that of their natural enemies. The air above the smoke seemed filled with crying birds. Their droppings fell among us, went unnoticed, to burn this ancient wood. As venerable as the Forest of Arden, seemed almost an act of sacrilege to me. But Eric was prince in Amber and soon to be king. I suppose I might have too. My eyebrows and hair were singed. My throat felt like a chimney. How many would this assault cost us, I wondered. 70 miles of wooded valley lay between us and Amber, and over 30 behind us, going back to the forest's end. Please! 2 or 3 miles ahead of us, the trail forks. The right branch comes more clockly to the river Oisin, which goes down to the sea. I think it's our one chance. The whole Valley of Gornath is going to be burned. Our only hope lies in reaching the water, he nodded. We raced on, but the fires outpaced us. We made it to the fork, though, beating out flames on our smoldering clothing, wiping ashes from our eyes, spitting such from our mouths, running hands through our hair when the flamelets nested there. Only about a quarter mile more. I had been struck several times by falling boughs. All the exposed areas of my skin pulsed with a more than feverish pain, and many of the covered areas as well. We ran through burning grasses, heading down a long slope, and when we reached the bottom we saw the water, and our speed increased, though we didn't think it possible. We plunged in and let the cold wetness embrace in. Bleez and I contrived to float as near together as possible as the currents took us, and we were swept along the twisting course of the Oisin. The interlocked branches of the trees overhead had become as the beams in a cathedral of fire. As they broke apart and collapsed in places, we had to turn onto our bellies and swim or dive for the deepest places, depending on how near we were. The waters about us were filled with hissing and blackened debris, and at our backs our surviving troops' heads in the river seemed as a strip of floating coconuts. The waters were dark and cold, and our wounds began to ache, and we shivered and our teeth chattered. It was several miles before we left the burning wood and reached the low, flat, treeless place that led on to the sea. It would be a perfect place for Julian to be waiting, with archers, I decided. I mentioned this to Blaze, and he agreed, but he didn't reckon there was much we could do about it. I was forced to agree. The woods burned all around us, and we swam and we drifted. It seemed like hours, but must have been less, before my fears began to materialize and the first volley of arrows descended. I dove, and I swam underwater for a long distance. Since I was going with the current, I made it quite a way along the river before I had to surface once more. As I did, more arrows fell about me. The gods knew how long this gauntlet of death might be drawn, but I didn't want to stick around and find out. I gulped air and dove once more. I touched bottom. I felt my way among rocks. I moved along for as far as I could, then headed toward the right bank, exhaling as I rose. I burst through the surface, gasped, took a deep breath, and went down again, without sticking around to get the lay of the land. I swam on till my lungs were bursting, and surfaced then. This time I wasn't quite so lucky. I took an arrow through my biceps. I managed to dive and break off the shaft when I struck bottom. Then I pulled out the head, and continued on by means of the frog kick and underbody sculling with my right hand. The next time up I'd be a sitting duck, I knew. So I forced myself on, till the red flashes crossed my eyeballs and the blackness crept into my head. I must have stayed down for 3 minutes. When I surfaced this time, though, nothing happened and I trod water and gasped. I made my way to the left bank and grabbed hold of the trailing undergrowth. I looked all around me. We were running short on trees at this point. The fires hadn't gotten as far. Both banks seemed empty, but so did the river. Could I have been the only survivor? It didn't seem possible. After all, there had been so many of us when the last march began. I was half dead with fatigue and my entire body was laced with aches and pains. Every inch of my skin seemed to have been burned, but the waters were so cold that I was shaking and probably blue. I'd have to leave the river soon, if I wanted to live. I felt that I could manage a few more underwater expeditions, and I decided to chance them before departing from the sheltering depths. Somehow I managed 4 more laps, and I felt then that I might not come up again if I tried a fifth. So I hung onto a rock and caught my breath, then crawled ashore. I rolled onto my back and looked all around. I didn't recognize the locale. The fires hadn't reached it yet, though. There was a thick clump of bushes off to my right, and I crawled toward it, crawled into it, fell flat on my face, and went to sleep. When I awoke, I wished I hadn't. Every inch of me ached, and I was sick. I lay there for hours, half delirious, and finally managed to stagger back to the river for a long drink of water. Then I headed back for the thicket, made it, and slept again. I was still sore when consciousness came once more, but a little bit stronger. I walked to the river and back, and by means of my icy trump found that Blaze was still alive.
Where are you? He asked when I had made the contact.
Damned if I know, lucky to be anywhere at all. Near the sea, though, I can hear the waves and I know the smell.
You're near the river?
Yes.
Which bank?
Left as you face the sea. North.
Then stay put, and I'll send someone after you. I'm assembling our forces now. I've already got over 2,000 together, and Julian won't come near us. More keeps straggling in every minute.
Okay, that was it. I stayed put. I slept as I did so. I heard them bashing about in the bushes and was alert. I pushed some fronds aside and peered forth. It was three of the big red guys. So I straightened my gear and brushed all my garments, ran a hand through my hair, stood erect and swayed, took several deep breaths, and stepped forth. I am here. Two of them did double takes, blades in their hands, as I said it, but they recovered, smiled, paid me deference, and conducted me back to the camp. It was perhaps 2 miles distant. I made it without leaning. Bleeze appeared and said,
"We get over 3,000 now."
Then he called for a medical officer to take care of me again. We were undisturbed all through the night, and the rest of our troops straggled in that night and the following day. We had perhaps 5,000 by then. We could see amber in the distance. We slept another night, and on the following morning we set forth. By afternoon we had made maybe 15 miles. We marched along the beach, and there was no sign of Julian anywhere. The feeling of pain from my burns began to subside. My thigh was healthy, but my shoulder and arm still hurt from here to hell and back again. We marched on, and soon we were within 40 miles of amber. The weather stayed clement, and all of the wood to our left was a desolate, blackened ruin. The fire had destroyed most of the timber in the valley, so for once there was a thing in our favor. Julian nor anybody else could ambush us. We'd see them coming a mile off. We made another 10 miles ere the sun fell, and we bivouacked on the beach. The next day, I remembered that Eric's coronation was near at hand, and I reminded B. Base. We had almost lost count of the days, but realized we still had a few remaining. We led a speed march till noon, then rested. By then, we were 25 miles away from the foot of Colvere. By twilight, the distance was 10, and we kept on. We marched till midnight, and we bivouacked once again. By that time, I was beginning to feel fairly alive once more. I practiced a few cuts with my blade and could almost manage them. The next day, I felt even better. We marched until we came to the foot of Colvere, where we were met by all of Julian's forces, combined with many from Cain's fleet, who now stood as foot soldiers. Bleeze stood there and called things like Robert E. Lee at Chancellorsville, and we took them. We bade maybe 3,000 men when we had finished off everything Julian had to throw against us. Julian, of course, escaped, but we had won. There was celebration that night. We had won. I was very afraid by then, and I made my fears known to Blaze. 3,000 men again, Colvere. I had lost the fleet, and Blaze had lost over 98% of his foot soldiers. I did not look upon these as rejoiceable items. I didn't like it. But the next day we began the ascent. There was a stairway, allowing for the men to go 2 abreast along it. This would narrow soon, however, forcing us to go single file. We made it 100 yards up Colvere, then 2, then 3. Then the storm blew in from the sea, and we held tight and were lashed by it. Afterward, a couple of 100 men were missing. We struggled on, and the rains came down. The way grew steeper, more slippery. A quarter of the way up Colvere, we met with a column of armed men descending. The first of these traded blows with the leaders of our vanguard, and 2 men fell. 2 steps were gained, and another man fell. This went on for over an hour, and by then we were about a third of the way up, and our line was wearing back toward Blaze and myself. It was good that our big red warriors were stronger than Eric's troops. There would come a clash of arms, a cry, and a man would be brought by. Sometimes he would be red. Occasionally furry, but more often he wore Eric's colors. We made it to the halfway point, fighting for every step. Once we reached the top, there would be the broad stair of which the one to Reba had been but an image. It would lead up to the great arch, which was the eastern entranceway to Amber. Perhaps 40 of our vanguard remained. Then 40, 30, 20. We were about 2/3 of the way up by then, and the stair zigged and zagged its way back and forth across the face of Colvere. The eastern stair is seldom used. It is almost a decoration. Our original plans had been to cut through the now blackened valley and then circle, climbing, and to take the western way over the mountains and enter Amber from behind. The fire in Julian had changed all this. We'd never have made it up and around. It was now frontal assault or nothing, and it wasn't going to be nothing. 3 more of Eric's warriors fell, and we gained 4 steps. Then our front man made the long descent, and we lost one. The breeze was sharp and cool from off the sea, and birds were collecting at the foot of the mountain. The sun broke through the clouds as Eric apparently put aside his weather making now that we were engaged with his force. We gained 6 steps and lost another man. It was strange and sad and wild. Bleeze stood before me, and soon his turn would come. Then mine, should he perish. 6 of the vanguard remained. 10 steps. Then 5 remained. We pushed on, slowly, and there was blood on every step for as far back as I could see. There's a moral there, somewhere. The 5th man slew 4 before he fell himself, so bringing us to another zig, or zag, as the case may be. Onward and upward, our 3rd man fighting with a blade in either hand. It was good that he fought in a holy war, for there was real zeal behind each blow. He took 3 before he died. The next wasn't as zealous or as good with his blades. He fell immediately, and then there were 2. Bleeze drew his long, filigreed blade, and its edge sparkled in the sun.
Soon, brother, we'll see what they can do against a prince.
Only 1 help.
Ah.
I'd say we were 3/4 of the way there when Blaze's turn finally came. He leaped forward, immediately dislodging the 1st man to face him. The point of his blade found the throat of the 2nd, and the flat of it fell alongside the head of the 3rd, dislodging him also. He dueled a moment with the 4th and dispatched him. My own blade was in my hand, ready, as I watched and advanced. He was good, even better than I remembered him to be. He advanced like a whirlwind, and his blade was alive with light. They fell before it how they fell, my friend. Whatever else you might say of Blaze, on that day he acquitted himself as became his rank. I wondered how long he could keep going. He'd a dagger in his left hand, which he used with brutal efficiency whenever he could manage a core. He left it in the throat of his 11th victim. I could see no end to the column which opposed us. I decided that it must stretch all the way to the landing at the top. I hoped my turn wouldn't come. I almost believed it. 3 more men plummeted past me, and we came to a small landing and a turn. He cleared the landing and began the ascent. For 30 minutes I watched him, and they died, and Dev died. I could hear the murmurs of awe from the men behind me. I almost thought he couldn't make it to the top. He used every trick available. He baffled blades and eyes with his cloak. He tripped the warriors. He seized wrists and twisted with his full strength. We made it to another landing. There was some blood on his sleeve by then, but he smiled constantly. And the warriors behind the warriors he killed were ashen. This helped him too. And perhaps the fact that I stood ready to fill the gap also contributed to their fears and so slowed them, worked on their nerves. They'd heard of the naval engagement, I later learned. Bleeze worked his way to the next landing, cleared it, turned again, began to ascend. I hadn't thought he could make it that far then. I didn't think I could make it as far as he had. It was a most phenomenal display of swordsmanship and endurance I'd seen since Benedict had held the pass above Arden against the Moonriders out of Ganesh. He was tiring, though. I could see that, too. If only there were some way for me to relieve him, to spell him for a time, but there wasn't. So I followed, fearing every stroke might be his last. I knew that he was weakening. We were within 100 feet of the top at that point. I suddenly felt for him. He was my brother, and he'd done well by me. I don't think he thought he'd make it then, yet he was fighting on, in effect, giving me my chance for the throne. He killed 3 more men, and his blade moved more slowly each time. He fought with the 4th for perhaps 5 minutes before he took him. I was certain the next would be his last. He wasn't, though. As he slew that man, I transferred my blade from my right hand to my left, drew my dagger with my right, and threw it. It went in up to the hilt, in the throat of the next man. Blaze sprang over 2 steps and hamstrung the man before him, casting him downward. Then he cut upward, ripping open the belly of the one behind that one. I rushed to fill the gap, to be tight behind him and ready. He didn't need me yet, though. He took the next 2 with a new burst of energy. I called for another dagger, and 1 was passed to me from somewhere along the line. I kept it ready till he slowed once more, and I used it on the man he fought. The man was lunging as it spun in, so the hilt rather than blade caught him. It struck against his head, though, and Blaze pushed against his shoulder, and he fell. But the next man leaped forward, and though he impaled himself, he struck Blaze upon the shoulder, and they went over the edge together. by reflex, almost without knowing what I was doing, yet knowing fully in one of those microsecond decisions you justify after the fact. My left hand leaped to my belt, whipped out my pack of the trumps and cast them toward Blaze as he seemed to hang there for an instant, so rapidly as he seemed to hang there for an instant, so rapidly did my muscles and perceptions respond. And I cried out, "Catch them, you fool!" And he did. I didn't have time to see what happened next as I parried and thrust. Then began the final lap of our journey up Kovir. Let's just say I made it and was gasping. As my troops came over the edge to support me there on the landing, we consolidated our forces and pressed ahead. It took us an hour to reach the Great Arch. We passed through. We entered Amber, wherever Eric was. I'm sure he'd never guessed we'd make it this far, and I wondered where Blaze was. Had he gotten a chance to grab a tramp and use it before he reached the bottom? I guess that I'd never know. We had underestimated all the way around. We were outnumbered now, and the only thing left to do was to fight on for as long as we could hold out. Why had I done such a foolish thing as throw Blaze my trumps? I knew he had none of his own, and that's what had dictated my response. Conditioned perhaps by my years on the Shadow Earth. But I might have used them to escape, if things went badly. Things went badly. We fought on until twilight, and by then there was only a small band of us remaining. We were surrounded at a point 1,000 yards within Amber, and still far from the palace. We were fighting a defensive fight, and one by one, we died. We were overwhelmed. Libelai, Uwella, or Deirdre would have given me Senquar. Why had I done it? I killed another man and put the question out of my mind. The sun went down and darkness filled the sky. We were down to a few hundred by then, and not much closer to the palace. Then I saw Eric and heard him shouting orders. If only I could reach him, but I couldn't. I'd probably have surrendered to save my remaining troops who had served me far too well. But there was no one to surrender to, no one asking for a surrender. Eric couldn't even hear me if I cried out. He was out of the way, directing. So we fought on, and I was down to 100 men. Let's be brief. They killed everyone but me. At me, they threw nets and unleashed blunted arrows. Finally, I fell and was clubbed and hogtied, and then everything went away but a nightmare which attached itself and wouldn't let go, no matter what. We had lost. I awoke in a dungeon far below Amber. Sorry that I had made it that far. The fact that I still lived meant that Eric had plans for me. I visualized racks and braces, flames and tongs. I foresaw my coming degradation as I lay there on the damp straw. How long had I been unconscious? I did not know. I searched my cell for a means of committing suicide. I found nothing that would serve this purpose. All my wounds blazed like suns, and I was so very tired, I lay me down and slept once more. I awakened, and still no one came to me. There was none to buy, none to torture. Also, there was nothing for me to eat. I lay there wrapped in my cloak, and I reviewed everything that had happened since I'd awakened in Greenwood and refused my hypo. Better, perhaps, if I hadn't. I knew to spare. Soon Eric would be crowned king in Amber. This thing might already have occurred, but sleep was so lovely a thing, and I so tired. It was the first real chance I'd had to rest and forget my wounds. The cell was so dark, arid, smelly, and damp.